Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you from the Blog Talk Radio Studios. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Work in the Marks, and I am New Jersey's premier journalist, the professor, Fernando Uribe, and he is New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, the amazing PBR here on Blog Talk Radio. What's going on, brother?
But okay, what's going on, man? What a long, strange trip it's been. Day number 8 without Vince McMahon. My heart just grows colder and lonelier by the minute. I miss the big man, but a lot of good wrestling stuff to talk about this past week. Can't wait to dissect all of it. How you been? How's the weather been treating you?
I can't wait for autumn, bro. I'm done with the heat. I don't mind a little vitamin D out there with the sun, but it gets unbearable, bro. I'm looking forward to the leaves changing colors and being a little more brisk and the NFL returning and all the fun stuff about the fall. That's what I care about, brother. But it's good to be here, man, with you. And folks at home, make sure you always shoot us an email and tell us what you think about your favorite pro wrestling / sports entertainment podcast every single week on Blog Talk Radio. workinthemarks@gmail.com. Again, write to us, workinthemarks@gmail.com.
At this point, we'll even take those weird chain letters, too. You know,
yeah,
if somebody wants to send us something, tell us we're an instant winner, you know, that'd be cool too. So anything
that's
you
right.
want to send our way, feel free to do it, please.
Hey, we got some filters on Google Mail, so it's fine, you know. But again, folks, workinthemarks@gmail.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram @working_the_marks. And of course, check out our own Instagrams. @PaddyRican, that's @PaddyRican for the great PBR. And of course, my own Instagram, @NoFilterUribe, that's @NoFilterURIBE. And yes, you know, folks, I got to say, I love everyone, especially all the new follows that still tell me, hey, even when you choose to follow me, you still get that little warning from Instagram because, you know, it's, you know, Zuckerberg likes to remind people, are you sure you want to follow this person? Because they've been known to, you know, whatever it is that Zuckerberg and Fascist Book likes to put out there, you know.
All right, bro, save it for the Monday show. Save it for the Monday show. Nobody wants to hear that right now. Save it for the Monday show.
I'm just saying.
You know.
Twitter, and of course, @working_marks. Check out PBR on Instagram, on Twitter as well, folks, on his own Twitter, @PatrickSKVM. And also my own Twitter, which, again, hasn't been shadow banned yet. @NoFilterUribe, that's @NoFilterURIBE. Again, make sure you like Work in the Marks on Facebook for all you Fascist Book subscribers. Big shout out to D Rotten for managing our page and always getting our stuff out there and promoting our episodes. So we love D Rotten. I won't mention his government name. I don't want to get in trouble there. But Pat, a lot going on in the world of pro wrestling / sports. You know, we'll get to SummerSlam in a minute. Great card last night. Some interesting stuff this week, certainly some news breaking. Again, folks, you know, depends on where you get your wrestling news from. It really, really, it's very subjective. I mean, Pat and I have talked about it on this show, I mean, incessantly, where we pretty much only trust Billy Boddy. And anyone else really isn't up to par with Billy Boddy. And say whatever you want, you know, whether you're a Meltzer mark or a Wig Keller mark or Sean Ross Sapp or whatever, just seems that Billy Boddy gets it consistently. But interesting developments this week. I'm not sure if you saw this, Pat, but apparently with Ric Flair's last match taking place later on tonight via Jim Crockett Promotions and on Fight TV, it seems like Mick Foley also is interested in doing one last match that was reported this week on Wrestling Inc. I don't know the state of Mick Foley's health, how he's doing. You know, I mean, I guess with all those concussions he's had, I mean, if you follow him on social media, you can tell his political IQ is pretty much down the toilet. But physically, have you read anything about how he is, and do you think he could do another match?
Well, I think if he can at least do his big spots, you know, like if he can do the knee in the corner, if he can do the stair spot where he takes the bump into the stairs, you know, if he can do all that good stuff that Mick Foley does, elbow drop off the apron and everything, why not? Give it a go. Let him get in there with a young guy, you know, let that young guy use it as heat, you know, whoever it is, say he's the king of hardcore now, you know, even though WWE doesn't really do hardcore, but say he's the king of hardcore now, you know, and give it to the fans. I think, look, I'm all for these types of things because as a father of younger fans, you know, it's cool for them to be able to experience these things and to see these guys that I got to see. And, you know, especially people who are, you know, remembered and respected and, you know, well-regarded in the industry. So, yeah, I'm all for it. I think if he could do it one more time, why not? Give it to somebody who, you know, they're good on the stick and somebody who, you know, can do the hardcore bit as well. It's got a little edge to them. But I'm all for it. If Mick could do it, let him do it.
And listen, he still has a great following. There are people that would definitely tune in to watch Mick Foley's last match. I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe because I'm biased here. I mean, maybe not as much as people tune in tonight for Ric Flair's last match, but he certainly has a following and a loyal, devoted fan base. So I wouldn't be shocked if he decides to do that. Who it would involve remains to be seen. I obviously wonder what promotion.
He's a great talker, Fern. He was a great talker. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, he is.
He's a great character guy. He's got just as much of a following as Ric Flair. You know what I'm saying? A lot of the same people who like Ric Flair like Mick Foley. So, you know, there you go.
No, definitely. In other news this week, a topic that was that was trending online ever since last week was apparently Max Dupree returned to television on Friday night during SmackDown and resumed his role as director of talent in the Maximum Male Models group, which, by the way, I got to say, they're growing on me. This week's episode obviously featured the Maximum Male Models, Massey and Mansoor, in some of the most, I don't know, showing off beachwear, you know, celebrating SummerSlam this weekend. Some of the vignettes were, you know, the typical, whatever you want to call them. I mean, I don't want to sort of sound, this might sound a little homophobic, but, you know, sort of like those uncomfortable visuals that, of men wearing certain things and doing certain things with water splashing on themselves and whatever. It's a funny thing. I mean, it's a good vignette. They're growing on me. But I got to say, though, it was good to see him, obviously, with Maxine. I mean, Maxine, I'll tell you, you know, garnish my wages if I could have a baby with this one, you know. But Sophia Cromwell from NXT, obviously, they're there. It's really catching on, I think. And for all the rumors, obviously, that he was on the outs because of Vince McMahon, we all know with Triple H / Paul Levesque taking over creative completely in this company now, it seems like maybe Max Dupree got a reprieve here, and maybe he'll make the most of it because I like this gimmick. I think it's funny. I think it appeals and plays to the audience that just maybe doesn't like the uppity, snobby model. You know, we live in this world of Instagram models and social media and branding. I think it's a good gimmick. It's growing on me, bro.
I think it's been great from the outset. I mean, I was a big fan of it. It's easy heat. It's guys that were kind of languishing, really not doing much of anything, and needed kind of like, you know, boost in the arm to get them going. Shot in the arm over there, and they bought in Max Dupree, and he's done a great job. I think personally, they worked the dirt sheets, man. They worked the dirt sheets just to see what people would say. And of course, the marks are all going to believe that, oh, you know, it's because of Vince. You know, he doesn't want to be around because of Vince, because the creative sucks, because of this, is that, because the fans have convinced themselves of that, you know. Never mind the fact that this guy's a human being and maybe he's got something to do or maybe he's coming back. Who knows? Who knows what it was? But I think it's been a really good gimmick. It definitely creates some uncomfortable moments, I got to say, at least for me. But all in all, I just think it's really good and it's serving its purpose in being something that's going to catch people's attention. and it's taking guys that otherwise wouldn't be doing shit and get them on TV and get them involved. And I think there's a lot of potential with this. I'd like to see at some point Pretty Deadly taking on them, because I feel like Pretty Deadly's kind of in that same vibe, and they could do kind of like a battle of the models type of shit, and that would be really funny. But overall, man, it's a creative gimmick. It's an interesting gimmick. They also made it interactive. I don't know if you know or not, but I sent my application. Hopefully I get in, but I doubt it. I doubt it. But it's something that's certainly really well done on TV, and I feel like it's got a pretty high ceiling.
No, it certainly has, and I think, listen, I've always liked LA Knight. Going back to his days at Impact as Eli Drake, I think he's always been a good worker. Again, I'm not going to say, you know,
great talker. He knows how to talk, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think he checks off a lot of boxes. I think this is a great gimmick. I think if he's not, and again, and listen, we talked about this off the air. You know, this is a guy on the, you know, younger side of 40. He's been wrestling for a while. You don't know what those conversations are like backstage. You know, Mark's immediately just want to be like, well, look at Vince wasting this guy. He's a good wrestler. Why aren't they using him? Blah, blah, blah. Again, we've talked about this before on the show, dude. It's, and even off the air, whether it's him, people like Bobby Roode, who came into this company already in the early side of 40, there's a lot of wear and tear in those bodies. Who knows what those conversations were like? Maybe they just were like, hey, listen, I want to come in and work, but, you know, maybe I'm just not up to a main event schedule. I want to be here. I want to contribute. Again, it's easy for Marks to sort of think the worst of Vince, which is not the first time. And, you know, to just assume that, oh, this guy's not being used properly. Again, we don't know backstage what those conversations are. Maybe he's physically not feeling up to wrestling regularly anymore. Maybe now he wants to maximize his talking abilities. I don't think this is a bad thing, per se, especially for someone like LA Knight, who, as you said, he's a great talker. He gets his point across. He's good on the microphone. And I think this gimmick is a good thing for him. I just think it's funny when, again, and I've been guilty of this too sometimes, where I'll want to think the worst of Vince. But in this case, it's like, who knows? Maybe he's just like not up to a regular schedule anymore. Maybe he's just wants to wind down. And, hey, this is a good way to keep him on TV, keep him relevant, keep him in the mainstream eye. Again, I don't see anything wrong with it. But Marks are still going to die on that hill, bro, when it comes to stuff like this.
For whatever reason, Marks have convinced themselves that Vince McMahon hates them. And Vince McMahon is an evil, vile person who completely mistreats all of his talent, and everybody hates being backstage and all this other. It's like, dude, like, no. It's a job like anywhere else. He's a boss like anyone else. You know, Vince McMahon has done everything that he can to keep people entertained, to keep people coming back, regardless of how good, bad, ugly, or indifferent it is. And people still do. People still do. I've said it before. I mean, we got to get the gimmick guy on the horn here, okay? We got to get some shirts and stickers made. Cry, complain, tune in, repeat. That is exactly what it is that Marks do all the time. And let me tell you something. Here's another little added thing here. For all you people who want to criticize Vince McMahon for all of his, you know, transgressions and whatnot, keep that same energy with Dixie Carter, okay? Because Dixie Carter was doing the same thing, too. She was putting over the boys, you know what I mean? So, and I don't see people quick to criticize her either, okay? You want to talk about misappropriation of funds? All right, fine, that's fine. You're entitled to that. But, like, as far as it goes with, like, hey, you know, the boss ruined the talent, Dixie Carter is guilty of that, too.
Well said there. Well said. And it's funny how Marks conveniently forget stuff like that when it's been talked about, I mean, at length on podcasts, shoot interviews about Dixie Carter having inappropriate sexual relationships with talent. So,
let me clear something up here, but I'll say, not to cut you off there, but let me clear this up. Like, it's, I'm not defending any of the actions. I'm not saying any of that. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is like, if you're going to criticize Vince, criticize Dixie equally, because she did it too. And criticize every wrestling promoter while you're at it, okay? You'll be there longer than Jericho going through his list of holds that he knows.
That's a good, you know what? That's a good visual, and that's a good point there. I'm telling you. No, you're absolutely right on that. And it's funny how marks have a selective memory when it comes to these things or how sanctimonious they're going to become, you know, as it pertains to topics like this. So, no, absolutely. And, you know, again, getting back to, again, LA Knight being back on TV, hey, that's great. And if it means that you can advance this angle, what it becomes, I don't know. I mean, I like, you know, I like seeing Maxine on TV. I'm not going to lie to you. But, I mean, I think it'll be interesting for sure. Pat, another interesting little tidbit here this week on the news, and before we get into reviewing SummerSlam, and I don't know if you had a chance to look at this, but it seems that obviously this weekend in Nashville, obviously the StarCast convention, which again you corrected me this week on, where I thought tonight's event was called StarCast. No, it's just Ric Flair's last match. Brought to you by Jim Crockett's Promotions. Obviously, StarCast is the convention that's taking place in Nashville. What's interesting, though, on one of the things this week during this convention was Saraya, obviously formerly known as Paige in WWE, talking about, you know, her place in wrestling. I don't know, man. I don't know if you had a chance to catch some of this podcast appearance where she was in a roundtable panel. But it seems like, again, and let's not go on the physical, like whatever she's done to herself and alterations, but it seems like she seems really at peace here with where she stands in the business. And we don't know the extent of her physical state, where her neck is at, what she can do, what she can't do. But it just seems like she's really at peace after a very volatile last few years. I mean, I remember meeting her at a meet and greet in 2016 in Rahway, New Jersey. And I don't know, since then, obviously, we've all read about the downward spiral. It seems like she's in good shape right now, I think, physically and maybe even more importantly, mentally. And that's good, especially in a business where, you know, this can eat you alive and you can go down a really long rabbit hole real quickly. I don't know about you. I was happy to see her. Seems to be like in a much better place now.
Yeah, I mean, as far as like, you know, the modern day, like Divas Revolution and all that stuff and the Four Horsewomen and everything, you know, a lot of that came directly as a result of Paige. You know, Paige was a big, big part of that. And Paige was a very good worker. She was a girl who grew up in the business. She knows the business inside and outside. She can work any type of style with any type of worker. For me, she's a Hall of Famer, in my opinion, man, just because of her influence and her impact on women's wrestling, you know? And, you know, I think that she also was big because she had a unique look, you know? She didn't have the stereotypical diva look. You know, how she chose to alter her appearance later on is her own business. But, you know, at the time, she had a very unique look. And I think that also not only lent itself to women's wrestling, but the girls with different looks. And I think it kind of, you know, kind of created that path for them to kind of be seen more regularly. But, you know, I'm happy for her. I mean, addiction is a really horrible thing, you know. And, you know, anybody who's going through any type of addiction, if you're listening to this show right now, reach out for help. You know, there's always resources available and people do love you and care about you. I know it's corny as hell and stereotypical, but it's the truth. So I'm very happy for Saraya and where she's at. And, you know, I wish her nothing but continued success. If I had to forecast what I think's going to happen with her, I think she'll probably go out there, maybe work the indies, maybe do a match in AEW, something to that effect, prove that she's, you know, okay enough, healthy enough to do it again. And then they bring her back, and they do the gimmick with her. She's not in the Hall of Fame, is she? I don't think she is, right? No.
No, they haven't inducted her. No, they have not inducted
okay.
her.
I get confused sometimes because, you know, like there's been a few people that have retired and then immediately gotten inducted right after. But that, if I had to guess, like, what they would do, that would be really smart, you know, and use her to take on a young up-and-coming talent, maybe run a little program, maybe put the strap on her one more time. You know what I'm saying? But she's definitely somebody that deserves those types of plaudits at the end of her career.
No, absolutely, absolutely. One other tidbit here on the news cycle, GCW had their event a couple of days ago on Friday. Again, Nashville seems to be the center of the wrestling universe this weekend, clearly. It was the event was called the People versus GCW. GCW World Champion John Moxley, also the AEW World Champion right now, had a successful title defense against Blake Christian. Seems like a good card, obviously, you know, for those that follow GCW. I do not follow it regularly. I mean, I try to follow as much wrestling as I can. Sorry for the audience at home, I don't follow GCW. I do try to keep up with the news and see what's going on. But certainly some interesting results there. Someone who I really, really like. I mean, she's an impact girl. Masha Slamovich, like this sort of like Russian, I don't know, just monster that just is like bulldozing people, you know, girls in that division. They had her fighting a guy last night on Friday. So it's kind of interesting what GCW does, man. You know, it just seems like Moxley loves doing these shows. Nick Gage, I know, cut a promo. He was in attendance. I don't know, man. It's just, it's funny. I guess, listen, as long as he can keep physically doing it, it seems like no one's going to tell John Moxley he can't do these shows.
Well, I think a big part of him leaving, aside from the money that AEW is offering him, was mainly because he would have the freedom to do these types of things. He enjoys doing it. You know, however people feel about it or not is their own thing, but he, as a performer, enjoys doing these types of things. And I think that because of that, he, you know, he kind of opted to go down the route that he went down. I just think that eventually, you know, he's getting older. I think it's only a matter of time before he kind of finishes out whatever he's going to do, which probably might be another year of this. If he's not already in his 40s, he's going to be shortly. You know, he's a guy that I see kind of just wrapping up his time on the indies and then just going for one more cash grab in the E and doing like a Shield reunion or something before Roman bounces. That's what I'm thinking. You know what I mean? If I had to kind of, forecast what I do.
Sorry to cut you off. According to Wikipedia, John Moxley is 36. So he's, not old at all. But that's not old at all. But his body's been through a lot, so he might feel 46.
Yeah,
that's what everything he's been through. You know.
Well, you know, between that and also becoming a father too, you know, I mean, this is stuff that's definitely going to take a lot out of you. So, you know, I just think at the end of the day, he's probably looking at him going, "Gee, you know what? I have an opportunity to go back to give back under a new regime, under somebody who made me feel like I was valued." You know, and again, I'm not going to say that doesn't exist. That does exist. But to the lengths that fans think, no. To the lengths that marks think, like, you know, these guys just don't want to work for Vince McMahon, it's like, no, dude. No. There's a lot of other variables to consider that are not just Vince McMahon. And a lot of those variables are on the performer's end. But, you know, I think that would be interesting to him. And, you know, who knows how long Roman's going to stick around, you know. Obviously, Roman's decreased his schedule, but I'm sure that if Roman's going to stick around for a year or two with a decreased schedule, he's going to want to do better stuff, more emotional stuff, more compelling storytelling. And what better person to do that with than one of the guys from the Shield? And, you know, you can reunite the Shield again. You know, I mean, I thought he and Moxley had great matches together. I thought all three of those guys worked each other so well. And, you know, to be able to get them back, that would be awesome. In a dream world, if I had to pick, I mean, depending upon when Moxley's contract expires, but if it expires in 23, you know, I'd love to see Rock come back, take on Roman, beat Roman with the help of the Usos. The Usos turn on him and join with Rocky because he's the real head of the table. And then Roman has to get the Shield back together to do like a six-man and then to maybe face Rocky. But Rocky's just doing a one-off, so that's
hey,
a pipe dream, folks.
Hey, Triple H, when you have a chance, and I know you tune into the show, hire a PBR as your booker, bro, right there. That's a booking dream right there.
Well,
I just told you.
If Yeah, Triple H, if you want to hire me, I just want you to know I can count to 10, I can count to 20, I can count to 3. I'm good at ring crew, and I'll do anything. And I'll take tickets. You can make me a lunch lady, whatever, you know, it's fine. But, definitely, you know, I would like to see that. But from what I understand, Rocky's just coming back for a one shot. So bottom line is there's a lot of upside for Jon Moxley to come back. And I think ultimately he's done it, man, because he's inevitably going to exhaust all his options in AEW. Unless he just wants to keep cutting his forehead open, then, you know, at that point, that's his thing.
Yeah, no, definitely. Well, again, let's get into SummerSlam here. Great premium live event last night on Peacock. Thankfully, you know, we were able to watch, you know, the show without, you know, an official amount of ads, but...
You paid the $5 extra now? You're paying $10 a month now?
No. I chose not to do that. I'm still withholding my extra $5 and spending it on another cocktail when I go out. But great card, though, Pat, top to bottom, obviously. Let's kind of run through it real quick, what you like, what you didn't like. No disqualification tag match. The Mysterios teaming up against the Judgment Day. Nice to see Rhea Ripley back out there. I know there have been some reports about her health, whether it was an irregular heartbeat, maybe a concussion. Just nice to see her out there. Talented girl. I love Rhea Ripley, you know, but good match. What do you expect from three solid workers? Dominic, I think, has really improved in this last, I would say, since the pandemic when they were just doing Thunderdome shows. I mean, I think Dominic is really, really improved. I mean, are there still some things he could work on? Of course, like anybody. Solid match. You saw the vignettes during the pre-show about Edge. You expected him. It seemed almost like predictable, like, okay, he's got to come out during this match. And sure enough, he didn't disappoint. A good match. I thought he was kind of teasing a Brood entrance with the staircase and the fire, but good to see Edge back. Where this goes now with the Judgment Day, I don't know, remains to be seen.
I was digging the super demonic look from Edge. He was really going for like the whole demon satanic kind of vibe with the red jacket and the hair and like, you know, it kind of looks like the devil. He's like the devil came back. I guess that's what he's trying to push. But yeah, we all kind of knew what the deal was. That was excellent stuff. You know, he and Ray, former tag team champions. So, you know, there's always that little nugget. Dominic, I fucking love the mullet on him. Hit the mullet works for him more than it works for Brian Pillman Jr. because Dominic's Mexican. And Mexicans love mullets. So, you know, that's he's taking that heat away from him, in my opinion. But overall, just a really solid face versus heel tag team match. Love seeing Rhea Ripley anytime I can, respectfully. And, I thought it was a really solid, well-done, well-produced heel versus babyface tag team match with a surprise return. Or, well, quote-unquote surprise return.
No, yeah, definitely. A good match. I think it'll be interesting to see where this goes from now with Edge and the Judgment Day for sure. Let's kind of go through the card here a little bit quick. Pat McAfee and Happy Corbin. Kind of what you expected, you know, a really, really braggadocious entrance for Pat McAfee. I'm a huge mark for Pat McAfee. I love him. I think he's entertaining. I think, he's a natural athlete. You can tell that. He's picked this up really, 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 I think, a lot better than people expected him to. He puts in the time. You can tell he trains. But it's funny, though. There are a couple of spots during this match where I get it. It seems like Pat is always intent on doing that backflip off the top rope. It seems like he wants to do a swanton off the top rope. I get all that stuff. There are a couple moments that were sloppy. I know he went to the corner after the referee was knocked out. And by the way, as soon as I knew Charles Robinson was in this match, I said, there's going to be a ref bump. Something's going to happen. You know, little Nate likes to take those bumps. And sure enough, when the referee was incapacitated, Pat McAfee returned the favor, gave him a low blow, tried to do the Panama Sunshine off the second rope. Looked a little sloppy. Again, a nice match. I'm sure maybe backstage Triple H might have had a word or two with Pat McAfee, like, yeah, man, I don't know, dude. Like, stick to basics here. But a good match, though, with a Happy Corbin.
Well, it takes a Pat to know a Pat, and that Pat deserves a pat on the back. He did a great job in there with Happy Corbin. I think the both of them were able to make enough of the story in this match to get people interested. You know, yeah, he did his usual high spots. The one thing that stuck out to me is I watched it with my cousin, and my cousin was also a worker. We noticed how blown up Pat was at the end of the match. Pat McAfee looks like he, and you know, this is kind of a little pulled back the curtain, but like when wrestlers wrestle, they kind of use a certain type of breathing style to help you not get blown up as much. You know, you might commonly hear it like this, you know, Mick Foley with that, so that little breathing technique helps you keep your wind a little bit longer, a little hack in the ring. Pat McAfee doesn't seem like he does that. So when Pat McAfee was done, he was so blown up in the match. And you could see the difference between he and Corbin. Another thing that stuck out to me was there was some weirdo on the ramp on the way down during Corbin's entrance that painted his face like the Joker. And you could see that this guy must have done it in the bathroom or something, but he was standing there, like, yelling at Corbin, like, I guess, like, you know, trying to shoot his own angle or something, you know? So, and then if you notice right afterwards, they cut away from him, and then security escorted him out because, you know, that typically WWE doesn't like that kind of stuff. They don't want people doing that kind of thing. Like, you know, it's like, get out of here, bro. Like, we're not trying to put you over. Like, this ain't your show. But overall, you know, good match. Yeah, you know, he's still a little sloppy. He's got a ton of upside. But like I remarked to my cousin yesterday, you know, you look at guys like him and, you know, Logan Paul, which we'll talk about shortly. You know, these are guys who are athletic. They understand entertainment. They have a following. They're genuinely, like, interested and respected. And they don't carry a lot of the baggage and the problems that some of these ex-indie wrestlers do and the egos that they have, you know? So they're willing to go along with whatever the program is because they're happy to be there and they're going to do it well. And they just check off all the boxes all around. So, you know, I can't say that I blame WWE for doing this because it's smart. And he's the announcer. And inevitably, you know that this is going to build to a match between Pat McAfee and Corey Graves. So we'll see when we get there with that one, but that should be pretty interesting. But overall,
no,
I enjoyed
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Speaking of Logan Paul, since you just referenced him, I would argue one of the matches of the night, I think Logan Paul and The Miz told a great story. I love the finish, you know, beating The Miz with his own move. Always nice to see Maurice at ringside. I mean, my goodness. You know, talk about a MILF. I mean, that's Maurice, folks. That's just the way it is. Sorry if that offends anybody, you know, whatever. But great match, good storytelling. Logan Paul has picked up a lot, bro. He's a natural athlete. You can tell that frog splash from the top rope to the table. My God. Oh, I mean, I was just flabbergasted with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, man, there's just so much to break down. But, like, you know, Logan Paul, he gets it. He really gets it. And, you know, a long time ago, I had said it when I was on some other podcast that, like, two people listened to. And I had mentioned that Logan Paul needs to stop with the boxing, needs to stop with the you know, the gimmick boxing and all that stuff and, you know, fighting YouTubers and all that. Like, this dude, he's cut out for wrestling. He should actually be involved in the business. And sure enough, he's involved in the business. And just, man, so many little things. Like you said, you know, you can tell that he's putting in the work, the little things he does. Like selling exhaustion in a match, like, you know, still being able to like walk to the top rope, but selling those little things, like, you know, he's been in a battle, you know, he's been at it. Miz, you know, again, not the flashiest worker, not the best worker, a solid. The Miz is one of the greatest mid-card wrestlers ever. He really is. But more importantly, the Miz understands the WWE's TV style, and he understands what to do. He's also a guy from Ohio too. So they kind of have that instant connection, and they've just been able to create great chemistry. Logan Paul, you know, he reminds me of Art Barr, the late, great Art Barr, former tag team partner Eddie Guerrero. the way he does his frog splash, his body type. You know, our par used to do it obviously a little differently, but just the way it looks and the way he looks really reminds me of our par. And I just think that his potential is really, 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 really high. And WWE is going to develop him into becoming a very huge star. And do not be surprised if one day Logan Paul becomes WWE champion.
No, it's I wouldn't be surprised either. I wouldn't be surprised either. A couple other notes about SummerSlam here, too, on the card. Kind of interesting, though, Pat. You know, this is not surprising. Obviously, during the night, they showed some things to the crowd, obviously, who was in attendance. You know, Jim Cornette on Twitter this morning tweeting, obviously, they showed an appearance of you know, of Kid Rock. Obviously, he lives in Nashville, owns a couple mansions in Nashville. One of his songs on his album was one of the title songs. Not the most visually appealing woman next to him, clearly, unless you're Stevie Wonder.
That was hilarious. That popped me.
Really,
that popped me. That was hilarious.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. And this is kind of funny. Jim Cornette today on Twitter writes, quote, "Good to see 1960s character actress Barbara Pepper again. Sad to see at WWE still propping up the failed career of this repugnant right-wing trailer trash, quote, musician," as it referenced to WWE, you know, on their Twitter page, talking about WWE Hall of Famer Kid Rock is here at SummerSlam. You know, listen, I love Jim, the podcaster, the, you know, the guy that knows the business. We all know that Jim Cornette politically is as intellectually bankrupt as anybody. But, I mean, whatever. He's entitled to his opinion. But clearly WWE doesn't have a problem with Kid Rock. And we all know what Kid Rock's been doing, though. You know, he's been doing Tucker Carlson. He was on a special. I mean, he's a Nashville native. So, I mean, not surprising for WWE to feature him, though, during the card last night.
He's actually not a Nashville native. I believe he's from Detroit originally.
Okay, correct.
But
yeah,
he's convinced himself that he is, and that's fine. I don't really care. And again, like, I think this is kind of like corny, kind of like looking at it and not understanding what the deal is. WWE doesn't care. They've had people on that, you know, are kind of controversial. They brought back Hulk Hogan. You know what I'm saying? They've done shit like that. But he already knows that they don't really give a rat's ass about any of that stuff, because that stuff went on outside of the WWE universe. So, you know, they didn't have him talk about anything. They didn't have him do anything. If anything, they had him do a funny segment, you know, and I thought that was cool what they did. And yeah, so what? He fucking made the song for it. Big deal. Big fucking deal. You know what I'm saying? Like, it is what it is. That's just business. He's not there to talk about politics, is he? Did Kid Rock talk about fucking politics for like 2 seconds when he was kissing that, you know, very well-fed woman? No, he didn't.
That's you're really nice there. I was going to say something else. Yeah, well-fed woman, absolutely.
But he didn't, right? He didn't talk about politics. He didn't go and like punch like, you know, a BLM protester in the face or something. No, right? You know, he didn't mace Michael Cole. No, right? He didn't do anything wrong. So then who cares? Who fucking cares? It's a fucking song for a fucking PLE. Who gives a rat's ass?
Exactly, yeah, exactly. And he's a guy.
Like, Jim Cornette should know this, though. But Jim Cornette should know this, though. Jim Cornette should know this. He's been around in the business long enough to understand this.
No, you're absolutely right. It's funny, you know. But Jim Cornette never missing a chance to be seen, especially on a weekend where it was so full of wrestling. Back to the SummerSlam card, obviously that was a moment during the broadcast, which was kind of interesting, to say the least. The U.S. title match, though, what you expected, a good match. Again, Theory is continuing to impress a lot of people, obviously people backstage. I'm not really a fan of the gimmick, but he's a great worker, a great heel. Bobby Lashley, still, you know, you wouldn't know, you would not know Bobby Lashley is in his mid to late 40s. Great shape, still a great worker, you know, nice talker, you know, not going to blow you away, but he serves his purpose and he knows what to do on the microphone. Good match. I was a little afraid with Lashley winning. I said, maybe Theory catches in later. More on that in a little bit. But, you know, good match for what it was.
Yeah, I thought it was really solid. I thought both guys put in a great shift. Theory, like, he's really good because, again, he's, like, you know, he got the Vince rub, so that's going to make the Marks hate him, right? And then he's doing, you know, the bad guy champion thing, you know, the bad guy, like, cocky bad guy thing, you know, and that's working for him. He gets a reaction. He gets the reaction that they intend him to get. And I think that that's what matters. Aside from that, the match, they were just both very well in sync with one another. The finish, I friggin' love. When Theory did the tumble into the ring, the Theory tumble into the ring, and then Lashley caught him in one movement and pressed him, and then Lashley slipped him down, caught him in the Hurt Lock. Really, really, really great finish. I mean, just absolutely great finish. The timing was excellent. Theory, like, with those things and the way he works and the way he moves in the ring, Theory's very impressive, man. And he works in a way that a dude his age or dudes his age normally don't work, you know? Just his awareness is just really, really incredible. So he's somebody that I think is going to be big talent real, real soon. And I just think as far as his gimmick goes, it's good for right now, but he's going to have to do something a little different or find something a little different to kind of spice it up to take him to the next level, you know?
I agree. Again, a good card for what it was. Obviously not the last we'll see of Theory during the evening. The Undisputed WWE Tag Team title match, guest referee, Nashville native, Slapnuts, Hall of Famer, Double J, Jeff Jarrett. Another great match between the Usos and the Street Profits. Not a surprise with the ending. I figured the Usos were going to retain. Again, not something that I really, really was unexpected last night.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're the best in the biz, man. They're gonna keep retaining. They're gonna keep going with that storyline. From what I understand, they were supposed to drop it to Boogs and Nakamura. That's what I heard. But then Boogs got hurt. But they're gonna hold on to that as long as they can. They might even go till WrestleMania. Let's be real. You know. But we'll see what goes on. I thought the match was excellent. I love Double J. Great to see him. An underrated wrestler in terms of, like, how he was used in WWE, in my opinion. He was a guy that could go with anybody. And even his indie stuff recently, he was still really good and still was able to do something different to be able to tell a good story. So nice to see him. But, yeah, man, I thought it was a solid match. I really loved that the Usos used the 3D. Just another one for them, and another great match between two solid tag teams.
No, definitely. The SmackDown Women's title match, as good as possible. A little bit of a controversial ending. Obviously, a great way to extend this feud. Obviously, you saw, I guess to my knowledge, Pat, like at least a Ronda heel turn. The way that, you know, she kind of was a sore loser after the match, going after Liv, going after the referee. Funny to see Daivari and Jamie Noble in the ring. I would have loved to see her, you know, manhandle Daivari, never cared for him, or Jamie Noble, but obviously that's not what was booked there. But interesting, you know, developments, obviously, the way the camera angle shows that, oh, okay, that Liv did tap right before the referee's hand counted the three. So a good way to extend it. Not sure if they'll have a match at the Castle coming up in September. And so the timing of that pay-per-view is interesting, which we'll talk about in a minute. But who knows? Maybe it'll extend itself to Philadelphia in October for Extreme Rules. I don't know. A good match for what it was.
I enjoyed it. I thought that it was better than, you know, obviously their little tiny tussle. But I thought they told a really good story. I thought Ronda did exactly what Ronda needed to do. It's crazy about Ronda. I noticed last night that even when she does, like, gimmick throws, she still does them in a very shoot way. And she just, there's just a snap to her movements that the other girls at that roster don't have. And it's really interesting, but I like the finish. I thought it was good. I saw both of them look really strong. Ronda going crazy could either lead to them suspending her, taking her off TV, you know, because, you know, Scrap Iron Adam Pearce, you know, he's Law and Order in the WWE. And, you know, I think they could do that, or they're probably just going to end up doing the castle thing. But overall, it was good. And, you know, I got to say, like, Ronda is kind of, she's kind of, like, really starting to improve, I think. And Liv did a great job in this match, too. So, in my opinion, you know, progress with both of them. Like, they're both putting in the shift, and you can tell. And I thought their match was produced really well. And good to see Liv kind of, like, get in there and work a little bit of that shoot style with Ronda, too, and add a little dimension to it.
Definitely. And, again, as a Jersey native, I love Liv Morgan. I'm glad to see that the title still on her. We'll see how long this run continues for Liv Morgan. The Raw women's title match, interesting. Opened the show. Great match. Listen, we've dissected the death on this show. You know, I'll concede the point to you always that, you know, Bianca's a great worker. She gets the business at a very young age, is a natural athlete. You know, I get it. You know, she checks off a lot of boxes for who WWE is trying to appeal to. I don't really care for the gimmick. I'm sort of over it, but it still somehow gets a reaction. Well, okay, well, then that's it. You know, it'll keep making money and keep being obviously very noteworthy and very visible, and that's fine. You know,
well,
but a great match.
You're in the minority of fans. You're in the minority of fans when it comes to Bianca Belair.
That's fine.
Because she really is over. She really, really is. She's organically over. And as somebody who's seen her walk into a building and, you know, in a crowd, like, in her reaction, it's legit, man. It's legit. But yeah, but you're definitely in the minority of fans. And that's fine. You know, there's a flavor for every fan. But she's a really, really talented performer. And she's somebody, and especially her and, you know, her fiancé, her husband, Montez, you can tell those two really study the business. You can tell those two, like, really, 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 like they are making the most of their Peacock subscription, okay? You can tell because every time those two come in, they look better, they look different, they look sharper. It's really something, and I think that those two are going to be future players in the company for a very long time.
No, absolutely, and obviously Bianca getting the win there. Clearly winning that feud in the rubber match and obviously settling that, as they say, in the blow off. At the end of the match, obviously we got to see Bayley return. Good reaction for her. You know, obviously it's an open air stadium. We can't really sort of quantify the noise per se, but a good reaction to see her. She's been gone for more than a year. Again, another one. It's not for me, you know, the, kind of butterfaces, you know, lunch lady haircut look girl that she is. I mean, that's fine. Not really for me, but she gets a reaction. Great worker. Bit of a surprise though, Pat, you know, with people that apparently whose contracts had expired. Sean Ross Sapp, again, who's about as reliable as your typical CNN or MSNBC correspondent, reporting that Vince McMahon was not interested in Io Shirai or Dakota Kai, or the idea of putting them as a faction with Bayley some time ago. Again, take that with a grain of salt. But this definitely, to use a term that you use very well, this definitely scratched the belly of a lot of marks online who are adamant about, well, now that Vince is gone and Paul Levesque is running creative, we're going to see a better product. And I think Triple H kind of, you know, kind of spoon-fed the marks a little bit of that with, like, bringing up Io Shirai, who I love, aside from the theme music, which is one of the best ones, I think, in the company. Great worker. Yeah, it seems like Triple H was kind of scratching that belly, bro, last night by bringing those two girls up to the main roster.
I thought it was a really good move. I think everybody was waiting for Bayley to come back. Bayley needed to come back and do something. You know, maybe a little different, maybe aesthetically, who knows. But I think this is nice. She has her own little stable. You know, that was a nice little swerve for the Marks, bringing Dakota Kai back. And, you know, Io Shirai, this is a talent that has been waiting to be on the main roster for a very, very long time. And I'm incredibly excited to see her on the main roster for a variety of reasons. And, you know, Bayley coming back, that was solid. Turning Becky face with Bianca, that was really good. And let me tell you something. Here's another thing for all you filthy marks out there, you little booger eaters. This, you people cry about long-term storytelling.
Vince McMahon and the WWE don't do long-term storytelling. Tony Khan does great long-term storytelling.
Becky and Bianca, that's long-term storytelling. That's long-term storytelling. You know, because about a year ago, all you people were complaining, I can't believe they squashed Bianca like this. This is awful. Well, there you go. Long-term storytelling. A year worth of fucking story right there. And a good story with great matches, by the way. Okay? Great matches. So put that one in your pipe and smoke it there, Marks.
Now, listen, I think you said it beautifully. I mean, this was a year-long feud. Certainly, without a doubt, a great match. It seems like Becky turned face right afterwards because it seemed like as Bayley, Dakota Kai, and Io Shirai were in the ring, I guess trying to intimidate Bianca Belair. Clearly, Becky came to stand by her side. You know, I think a lot of fans were waiting for that. I think, this heel gimmick of Becky, I think, has run its course. She's still over. She's still getting cheered. So no matter how much she tried to be obnoxious, no matter how extravagant or bombastic her outfits were, she was still very over. So I don't think fans were, you know, necessarily disappointed. You could tell the pop they got when she stood by Bianca Belair.
Yeah.
You know, again, I'm not a big Dakota Kai fan. I know the role she served in NXT. She served her purpose. A good worker. I mean, I'm not going to say that. But it just seems like Dakota Kai is like every other kind of, you know, petite girl heel that we've seen in NXT, which is fine, you know. I'm interested to see what she's going to do on the main roster. You know how much I love Io Shirai. Amazing theme song. Great worker. I think it's a really, really good faction to bring up. And as you said, to swerve the marks. Like, nobody expected this. And you could tell Twitter went crazy. Bleacher Report was going crazy. Instagram was going crazy. You know how I feel about Bayley.
Yeah.
I don't really care for her. She's a great worker. A better heel with this sort of snobby, you know, I'm better than you persona, which, you know, works. You know, not for me. Don't really care for Bayley. Of all the four horsewomen, that's probably the one that I care the least about. But clearly fans are happy to see her back, Pat.
Yeah, she's an immense talent, and it's good to have her back. And again, it's good for them to do something with some other talent as well. You know, I mean, what other way would you bring up Io Shirai that she wouldn't just get lost in the shuffle? Now you kind of put her in something, you know, interesting. You make her Bayley's right hand, and then eventually that could even lead to some type of feud between them. Dakota Kai works out too, because Dakota Kai has a big online gaming following. So this is, you know, and this is part of the WWE and their numbers, their metrics, and figuring all this shit out, and you know, taking things that people will look at and go, why are they doing that? That makes no sense. You know, there's this other person, or there's this other thing they could do instead. Yes, there's some truth to that. Perhaps there's something to be entertained there. But you know, at the end of the day, the WWE is going to do stuff that's going to promote numbers, and that's going to help things that they already own that have a following. Or, you know, help improve those types of things, you know? Dakota Kai has a big gaming following. The WWE has, you know, their foot in the gaming, the online gaming community, you know? And to pair with that and to bring that to the main roster, you know, that's good. And there's people that like Dakota Kai and like that kind of look. So that works out well. And Io Shirai, no matter what, she's gonna shine. Like, she's so talented, but you know, really good for them to do. And to the Becky gimmick, to your point with her, you know, the whole crybaby, whiny Becky version of the gimmick, I do agree, kind of had run its course. You know, you were only going to go so far. You know, this was the payoff for the feud. You know, she could only do so much with that gimmick. So, I think her turning face, her kind of teaming with Bianca now, I think that's going to add a little something for her, and I think it's going to put her in a good position come WrestleMania. Because I think what you want at WrestleMania is Becky is the face and Ronda is the heel. So if they did that double turn last night, then that's going to be interesting to see if we get there come WrestleMania. But I thought it was really solid overall, and a really good end to a great feud.
No, definitely. Again, long-term storytelling. I think they did it beautifully for the last basically almost calendar year with this. So we'll see where it goes, especially with the faction and where it goes with Bianca Belair for sure. The main event, Pat, WWE Undisputed Universal Championship on the line.
What about the Riddle running thing? We forgot about that.
Okay, yeah, that's right. It wasn't a sanctioned match. I thought it was an interesting run-in. I guess was that like a filler moment for the show? You thought maybe?
No, I think that was intentional. I think what they were trying to do was tease the match for the castle, because I think that's where they want that match to take place. That match, I honestly thought they were going to call an audible and do like a street fight with those two there, like an unexpected street fight. And that would have been pretty cool. But I really think that they're trying to build up that castle show because that's their next big stadium show. And, it's really important for them to stack the card. And, you know, again, don't be surprised if you see Conor McGregor or Tyson Fury involved in that somehow. Or maybe even a couple of English footballers. You never know. I thought that was a cool segment. I like the way that they're playing it, that Riddle's, he's messed up and stuff like that. He's trying to be, like, courageous. He's trying to be, like, heroic. And curious to see where that goes and looking forward to their match when it happens.
Anything Billy Body reported this week on what the extent of the injury was with Riddle? Was it serious? Was it just a stinger? I mean, obviously, anything like that sounds serious. But anything that you read about this week?
The only thing that I had saw was that it was gimmick, and that they gimmicked it to basically promote the match for the castle. So he's not actually hurt. It's just that, they're trying to gimmick it to get it to the castle.
Okay. Listen, I think that'll be a great match at that stadium. It's a great facility. Obviously, as we showed some highlights of it during the broadcast as well. So it should be good. Obviously, the first UK live stadium show if I'm not mistaken, ladies and gentlemen, since President George H.W. Bush was in office. That's how far along we're going back, folks, when WWE had a live stadium show in the UK. So definitely looking forward to that. Real quick, obviously because of the date, it's very interesting though, Pat. Certainly it's a Saturday during Labor Day weekend. The next night is All Out. I did read some reports. I can't confirm it, but is it just the Mark stirring up a frenzy? But is it my understanding that maybe Triple H wants to have a takeover that Sunday during the same night as AEW All Out? That would stir the marks into, I think, a full-blown meltdown, bro.
Well, here's the thing. It's a risky game. And I think that he would have to pack it with star power because the marks are going to go with AEW no matter what. Because AEW is geared towards exactly what they want. NXT, although it is a better produced mark product, is not entirely a mark product because the mark's not fucking booking it. That's the big difference. And I think that's why marks tend to gravitate towards AEW more because Tony's one of them. But if he does do it, man, hey man, I it would be interesting if they did a better number, if they got more views with the roster that they have now and no stars. That would be like, holy shit, Bron Breakker and all these people, you know, NXT 2.0 that you people hate. Like, wow, you know? But, no, that'd be cool, man. I'd like to see it. I'd like to see the pay-per-view fight, you know? And either way, man, at the end of the day, fans are winning, man. Fans are winning, you know, because fans are getting so much wrestling. It's bananas. So, yeah, man, it would be pretty interesting. It would be pretty darn interesting to see.
Well, the thing is, though, too, I think obviously Marks want to have their conspiracies, right? Well, you know, Triple H wants to get back to Tony Khan because of, you know, the NXT Dynamite, when there really wasn't a war to begin with. But the Marks want to concoct this sort of fabricated war in their minds. And now they're saying, well, now Triple H wants to get back at Tony Khan by having a show on that same Sunday as All Out. Listen, you said it perfect. I think it is a gamble. I think if you're going to have a show like that, it's going to
Can I find this on 4chan? Can I find this on 4chan? This conspiracy theory, because that's what it sounds like. It sounds like something you find on 4chan, you know, that, Triple H is trying to get back with Tony Khan for the Tuesday or the Wednesday night. We're like, give me a fucking break. He doesn't care. He doesn't care. NXT is a developmental show. You know what I mean? Like, this is nonsense that fans fabricate.
No, listen, I'm with you. I think it'll be interesting, though, again, leading to the castle. In the main event last night, bro, the WWE Universal Championship match, it's kind of funny. Fans are already, you know, great match. I would argue, Pat, the best match in the 7-year history. Certainly, I think it was unpredictable. I think the bulldozer, maybe I'm not using the right name to describe that vehicle, but forklift, excuse me. With the Lesnar logo on it. Obviously, some marks were complaining online that fans who pay hundreds, maybe thousands of dollars at ringside had their view obstructed. I mean, there wasn't a complaint about something. A good match, great match. You can tell they worked very stiff. They were laying shots into each other. Again, this is me. And maybe because you know how overly analytical I am, it's just the academic in me. I have to go back and watch what those seconds were, but bro, we've always been preconditioned to a last man is incapacitating the guy to where he cannot continue or she cannot continue, you know, up until the count of 10. Yeah, we've seen guys and girls buried under rubble. They can't seem to get up, but the idea of standing on top of the rubble, I don't know. Maybe that's just something that maybe I'm just maybe being a little too OCD about. Maybe I'm just being a little fickle or splitting hairs here. A great match. I wasn't a fan of the ending. I know that Roman can't beat him clean. You needed the Usos to help him, even Theory to some extent. The best match of their series, I just didn't really like the ending. But again, that's just me splitting hairs, Pat.
Maybe you should write a letter to Jack Tunney.
Oh, man, I don't know. Maybe. God rest his soul. He's a former president.
You should have the finish reviewed, you know. Or you know what? Send an email to Scrap Iron Adam Pearce. See what he says to you, you know. Stage a protest outside of corporate. Go ahead. I mean, it really, dude, really? You're really going to – come on, man. It's a freaking gimmick match.
I just said it was the best match of their series. I think it was great. I'm not saying
the finish was great. The finish was great. It was like seconds away, and then Roman posed. It was great. It had everything you needed. You know what was really unnerving for me the entire match? I don't know shit about that farm equipment either. You know, whatever that shovel piece is in the front, that thing was like kind of hanging over the ring. And I was like, oh, man, if one of these guys bumped their heads into it. At one point, I was convinced Brock was going to have five of them into it. But, man, he picked up the ring. That was the first. And Roman sold that fall so great, by the way. When he took that bump from the corner after Brock lifted the ring and he fell back and rolled over. Awesome, stuff.
Hey, listen, by the way, about that bump, you know, the first thing I thought of was like, hey, it's a good thing that Roman fell the way he fell, because if he fell just a little bit to his left, Pat, and he slid down and, like, he went right into that post, that could have been devastating when you think about the angle and the trajectory. And so, you know what I'm saying? Like, maybe, again, maybe I'm just splitting hairs here.
Yeah.
But I'm glad he took the fall he did.
That's blood right there. That's Samoan awareness. Samoan ring awareness.
There you go.
That's what he had. They all have. And it was excellent. I mean, this match had everything. Paul Heyman got F5 through a fucking table.
And
Paul Heyman sold that well,
by the way. He sold that really well.
Yeah. It looked like Danny DeVito, like in the Penguin. Like, he had the Penguin up, you know? It was amazing.
Yep,
it was amazing. It had spot after spot after spot after spot, but it did it in a way that it was just great. It was just great because they're both these huge Goliaths, these monsters, you know? And, like, Brock wasn't going to stay down. And it was awesome. I mean, complain about the finish all you want. The match was great. The finish was great. It was all great. And it was a fantastic way to end this feud. I don't want to hear people complain, oh, you know, they're going to wrestle again. Listen, man, nobody used to complain about this shit till Twitter, all right? Nobody gave a rat's ass about this till Twitter. Nobody was complaining about people not getting pushed back in the day. Nobody gave a fuck about it. They just enjoyed it. And that match, I just enjoyed. It was two dudes beating the crap out of each other, two kaijus beating the crap out of each other. Fantastic storytelling. Great way to end the feud. Paul Heyman bumped, picked up the ring. I mean, come on. What more could you ask for?
But Pat, did it really end the feud? I mean, we'll keep watching it. It doesn't really matter. But did it really end the feud, you think?
I think it's done. I think it's done now only because, and again, this is barring serious injury. Because like, you know, they're probably taking a look at, like, okay, who do we got ready to come back soon? Who's next in line? Who's going to be here? Who's going to be there? You know, Cody Rhodes is going to be coming back pretty fucking soon, dude. I'd say by, like, August or September. I think they kayfabe the fuck out of it. I'm going to go a little further. I'm going to say September, October. Okay? He'll be back. And when he comes back, that's going to be a big deal. I think, and again, I mean, I don't know. It's tough because with Theory, you don't want to just put the belt on him. Because there's just not enough there. There's just not enough there. You know what I mean? And I feel like he would kind of go the way of, like, Randy Orton in his first title reign. You know what I mean? I feel like it would kind of be like that. And I don't know, man. I just think that they're smart to keep it on him. He gets a lot of heat, right? He's a good mid-card heel. He could kind of, you know, dance with the main event. And he's a dude that I think should hold that briefcase until Cody could come back and put that thing on Cody. And I think we're talking there. I think we're doing interesting things with that briefcase on Cody.
I could see it, yeah. And again, we're looking at, you know, how well Cody can heal up from a torn pectoral. We'll see. But no, definitely, you know, again, a great PLE. Be interesting, obviously, now after SummerSlam, how they go forward moving towards the castle. As we know, Drew McIntyre is the number one contender. That should be another great match. They've had great matches in the past. And we'll see how long, you know, clearly, you know, Roman today celebrates 700 days as WWE Universal Champion, one of the longer reigns ever, like, in the history of the business. I mean, my God, I was, you know, me being the researcher and seeing just the, you know, the title reigns on it. I mean, listen, is anyone ever going to eclipse Bruno Sammartino of 2,803 days? Clearly not. That's never going to happen again. However, this reign has been historic for Roman Reigns. He has beaten a lot of people. He's had a lot of great matches. I mean, we're seeing a guy who is clearly in the last 10 years, Pat, since he's been on the main roster. My God, you want to talk about an infinite amount of improvement for someone like Roman Reigns and everything he's doing. You know, I'm not going to call him the GOAT. You know, obviously I think a lot of people fall into those traps of those GOAT conversations, but we're watching something special right now with Roman Reigns, bro.
Yeah, I mean, let's not go down that well just yet. You know, he's still got a lot of stuff left to offer, and he's still got a lot of things left to do. So I wouldn't want to get into that conversation, but obviously his resume for what he's done, for the level of talent that he's worked with, the level of talent that he has, kind of matches that he's had. I mean, you know, the guy's just been tremendous. And, you know, I got to say that for me, he's one of the best of this generation for sure. And he's a guy that just continues to get better and better every single time he steps through the curtain. So yeah, I absolutely agree. We're watching something special, but I don't think we should start going down that goat well just yet. You know, I think it's good for him to say it, you know, for Heyman to say it, you know, to promote that character, to put it over more. But as far as like actually using those words, as it pertains to him, I think we need to kind of put the brakes on that just a little bit until we see what Roman's career is completely made of. But right now, he's definitely something special, you know?
No, it definitely is. It definitely is. Pat, our main event this week, obviously, and I think very apropos for what we learned this Wednesday on Dynamite. By the way, 970,000 viewers this week on Dynamite, while Raw did a 1.9. While Raw did a 1.9 this Monday, you know, no word yet on the SmackDown number, but probably again in the early twos as it's consistently been. So what else is new? But yeah, man, you know, we learned that Tony Khan is introducing the trio's tag team titles. Obviously, they were laid out on the broadcast table on Wednesday night during Dynamite. Pretty much, you know, for those of us who kind of remember the nostalgia of the old NWA World six-man tag team titles held by people like Dusty Rhodes and the Road Warriors, Sting and the Road Warriors, and others. I don't know, man. It just seems like more titles, more problems in the world of professional wrestling, bro.
I agree. Certainly more titles, more problems. I mean, like, where do we really even begin? You know what I mean? Like, does it go back to, like, when WWE did the brand split and they started making all of their titles all over the place? You know, could we even say that they're the ones that are solely responsible? You know, I mean, you take a look at some of their championships now, right? Like, the women's tag team title, which basically is non-existent now, you know, that's a belt that realistically, are those belts that, yeah, there were good ideas, but like, were you going to feature them prominently? No, because, you know, you have a lot of other belts you're trying to feature, you know, you're trying to do a lot of other things. You're trying to tell different stories, different ways that might not necessarily be a part of any particular championship match. So, you know, it's a lot of different things to consider, but I mean, maybe call me old-fashioned in this sense that I kind of felt just having, you know, two major titles or three major titles, two singles, one tag was good enough. I kind of thought AEW was going to do that, but I guess with their talent crossover, you know, things kind of became a little bit different, you know, and then also with the purchase of Ring of Honor. But, you know, I don't know, man. I mean, you know, you have that championship that, you know, doesn't even know where it is. The geographically disabled championship or the geographically challenged championship. You got what? You got the, what's the other gimmick title they got there? They got the world title, right? They got the tag titles. They got the ROH titles now too, right? The ROH title, the ROH Pure title, the ROH TV title. The ROH tag team titles. I mean, dude, like, these are just way too many belts. And the problem is that, like, for me, I feel like wrestlers start losing their importance, you know? Like, if everybody has a championship, like, how good can you really be, you know? Like, maybe some people might even want to say it's, like, participation trophies, right? But you know, for me, I just think that it makes it difficult to feature people and to make people important, you know, if you have so many championships, if everybody's the champion, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of ruins everything for me. The six-man titles are cool.
Pat, real quick, I'm sorry to cut you off. I'll let you finish, though. But back to the sense of the titles, like when Stephanie McMahon introduced the women's tag titles on Raw a few years ago, I think it was like maybe 3 or 4 years ago, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, I thought for what we were seeing with a growing women's roster, not just on SmackDown Raw, but also on NXT, you saw a lot of talented females. And for years, right, wasn't there this outcry, hey, listen, there's no women's tag titles. I think it would be great. Obviously, the last one-day WrestleMania here in 2019, again, notwithstanding the results and what we thought of it and who we liked, who we didn't like, you know, to see that prominently featured at WrestleMania, I thought that was great. The idea of having women's tag titles, I thought was awesome. I think it'd be overkill if there was a Raw women's tag team title and a SmackDown women's. Yeah, that'd be overkill. But I don't think this was the worst idea. I think it allowed women to be prominently featured. And for women that were not going to be pushed as single stars and you put them in a tag team, I thought it was a good belt to have. I mean, obviously it's 70 days and counting that the women's title, the tag titles have been vacant per se, right? I mean, the best of my knowledge, nothing's going on with salvaging the relationship between Sasha Banks and Naomi. We'll see, obviously, with a new regime. But I think having those titles on TV and prominently featured, I think is a good thing, right? Because all WWE is trying to do for years now is prominently feature women. And they've had a lot of good female wrestlers. Well, I think there's nothing wrong with this. I just hope that, again, whether or not we believe Sasha's, you know, allegations backstage, oh, they weren't defending the titles, it wasn't featured. Well, again, whether or not she has a grievance or not, I don't know. I'm not going to take a side on that. What I'm saying is it was not being put on pay-per-views. It was not being featured. It's not the end of the world if they bring it back, Pat, and I think featured. Because, again, I think it allows certain women that may not get singles titles pushes to be still prominently featured on TV. I don't think that's a bad thing, bro.
I mean, look. To do it on Raw and SmackDown every week, no. You know, to include it in something like NXT where it's featured solely on that program, and then whoever defends the tag titles, like, you know, you could have main roster wrestlers go and take on these tag champs that are there. And that's a good way to bump the rating because you're bringing in talent, you know, from the main roster that people want to see. And now they're going to be like, shit, maybe I should watch NXT because this tag team from the main roster is going to be there. And then, you know, if you put it on a tag team that you develop really, really well, that's like maybe like a good high spot tag team, right? You could bring them to the main roster to have them do a spot. And, you know, that could get those belts over and kind of base it on that. But for me, I think it just doesn't check off the boxes that they want to check off. I don't think the interest is there as much as maybe they thought. And I think that's maybe why they kind of backtracked it. And that's why, you know, they're also kind of like, well, fuck it. You know, we'll kind of just leave it be for now, you know? So, yeah, man, it's a tough situation. But again, more belts you have, the more problems it creates because now you have to book these belts, you know, accordingly. You know, they're all championships that you want to give it respect, right? You know, no matter how ridiculous it is. You know, and not saying that the women's, you know, belts are ridiculous, but, you know, the 24/7 title is an example of that. You know, they booked the 24/7 title better than they booked the women's tag team title.
Yeah.
So, you know,
that's sad. Yeah. No, it's sad. And I think, but again, getting back to the premise.
And that's
so,
kind of an intergender championship if you think about it, too.
No, it is.
That's
no,
technically an intergender championship.
No, it certainly is. But I think also the premise that, you know, what AEW did this week in announcing now an AEW Trios tag team title, six-man tag title, a tournament supposed to be starting, I think, this week on Dynamite. It culminates at All Out in Chicago. I'm kind of cringing right now to think of what this tournament is going to look like. Are we going to have, like, the Dark Order having three entrants into this tournament? You already know the Best Friends and Orange Cassidy. You can tell Adam Cole and Red Dragon, or maybe Adam Cole and the Bucks. Who knows? I mean, isn't the rumor right that the tournament final is going to be like Kenny coming back and, you know, it's Kenny and the Bucks against Adam Cole and Red Dragon in the finals. I don't know what that means. But again, you know, aside from introducing these belts now, Pat, like you went through a tournament to highlight I'm only going to say it for the purposes of the segment, the All Atlantic Championship, which we all know geographically is just not correct. But now it's being featured on Dark. So you're pretty much taking a guy like Pac, who's a star, who's put together well, who's a good worker, and you're having him defend this title, which you featured to the moon and said, oh, this is a great new innovative championship. And pretty much all he's doing is defending it on Dark and Dark Elevation. Like, if you're going to feature a new title, feature it every week. Now, I get it. They don't have a lot of TV time. It's only 2 hours on Wednesdays. It's 1 hour on Fridays. They will be having a Battle of the Belts 3 this Saturday on TNT Live. I get it. Maybe you want to create more titles for these little specials, Battle of the Belts. But, Pat, it's just, again, it's Tony Khan just not coherently booking in a way that makes sense. And it's easy for me to say. I've never booked anything other than my 2K game on PlayStation. But if you're going to create titles, you got to make them mean something. I'm sorry. Tony Khan's not doing a good job of that.
No, I don't think so. And I don't think that it's just necessarily, the fact that there's too many belts. It's just he doesn't do enough character work for the people that should matter. That and the fact that, the main event's kind of interchangeable. You know, it's like every week it's somebody different in the main event. You don't have steady main eventers like the way you do in WWE. You know, and again, perception's reality, man. Like, if you feature somebody like a superstar, they're going to be perceived as a superstar. They're going to be received as a superstar by the fans. And that's the thing, man. You want that. You want people to think that your wrestlers, that your talent are larger than life. You want people to think that your championship is the most important championship. Tony Khan is not doing enough with the character work, and he wants people to watch the YouTube program and do this and do that. Like, nobody cares. Nobody's going to do that. Marks are going to do that. Marks are going to do that. But the mainstream audience, the people that you're trying to capture, and the people that are going to help keep the business growing, those are the people that you need. And you need to do those little things in order to get those people to keep coming back. You know, you want to just get them there, period, and keep them coming back. You know what I'm saying? Time after time. So, you know, these are things that Khan does that to me, you know, I'm kind of just like, man, this isn't good. Like, this is silly. You know what I mean? This is really, really silly. Like, stop booking your stuff geared towards marks. The other thing, too, is that I think he created this as well, or he bought these championships out to basically kind of capitalize on what worked for the Bucks and Omega and those guys. And that was that whole, you know, elite group. That was like the Young Bucks, you know, and Kenny Omega. You know, like that was like the thing that worked for them. That's the thing that kind of exposed them to a mainstream audience in the indies. That's the people that's the gimmick that kind of got them over with the marks. And I think they're trying to kind of revert back to some of that because maybe they're lacking creativity or, you know, maybe they just want to do a cash grab because they can rock the Bullet Club stuff and it's okay. So either way, man, I just think that with more belts, you know, you create a lot more problems. I just think that they kind of need to simplify it. You know, I kind of hope that the WWE does the same thing and just have the champions defend on all the shows, and that's it, and do it that way, you know? But, you know, we'll see what the future holds as far as this stuff goes, but I'm not a fan of a lot of those.
I'm with you, and it's interesting to me that I get it, new titles kind of gets fans' juices flowing, and they all – but, again, it's – think about why, I mean, again, we have to sort of get out of this mindset now saying, well, why Vince? That's, you know, Vince is no longer in the picture. But why do you think that the European title, which was always a title that was had a lot of prestige, why do you think that hasn't been brought back? I think, to your point, it's gotten, you know, it was probably thought about backstage and, you know, in creative meetings that, hey, listen, we start having way too many titles here. Like you said perfectly, it's just becoming like a participation trophy climate. And listen, we all know how much I hate that, you know, which you can hear about on Monday nights, folks. But I think it was smart all these years by WWE to not, you know, perpetuate that climate by having these titles. Yes, it's, again, fans were clamoring about bringing back the hardcore title. That's not what WWE was for some time since the end of the Attitude Era. Like, they're not having hardcore matches anymore. Now with moving towards TV-14, I don't know. I seriously doubt that will change the mindset creatively about whether or not to bring back these titles. But I would argue it'll be interesting about what this does to the landscape because, you know, I think Tony Khan's just kind of in panic mode here, man. I think he's just trying to come up with anything and anything to boost ratings, which it's not working. Again, another week under 1 million viewers. And once again, folks, you know, what's to blame this week? You know, maybe Shark Week, you know, it was a good week this week on Discovery. You know, yeah, the baseball pennant races are heating up, but let's be fair, Pat. You know, there's no NBA on. There's no NFL. I'll be back in a couple months. So it's like this is a time you would think Tony Khan has to be full-blown steam ahead and say, listen, what can I do to help accelerate this product to more eyes? Like, okay, it might have gotten a boost for the marks. Like bringing those titles out, yeah, it helps propel the marks into a frenzy. I don't think it gets new eyes in the product. And again, it's just showing how tone-deaf and disconnected Tony Khan is. But the marks don't want to hear that. The marks are going to die in a hell that, oh, he's just trying to make – he's trying to be different from WWE. Okay, great. Clearly he is by having garbage wrestling on on Wednesday nights and on Friday nights.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, at the end of the day, dude, it just seems like he's convinced that his way is the best way. And the numbers, you know, it seems like they don't matter to him. You know, he's really just intent on doing things his way. He's going to go with CM Punk. You know, when CM Punk comes back, he's going to get the title back. They're going to do him and Kenny. It's going to be a whole big thing. It's going to be a whole big thing that they're going to do. But again, by the time they get to all that, they're going to end up losing so many fans because so many people are just not going to care by that point. So, I don't know. Let's see what Tony Khan does. But if he keeps going this way, I said it before, I really don't think AEW is going to last.
I'm with you. I think it's going to be something that, you know, you can only bleed money up for so long. And listen, you got a show coming up this Saturday, Battle of the Belts. You got All Out in Chicago. I mean, whether or not this is their big show of the year, I would argue, Pat, that it's not Double or Nothing that's their big show. I would argue that All Out seems to be their big, big show for the year. But I could be wrong. Maybe I'm misconstruing the way I look at the way that the company's set up and the emphasis they put on it. But I just don't think introducing – and listen, are you going to give exposure to guys that maybe aren't going to be featured prominently? I mean, unless you're putting these belts on new talent to get them over – what's the sense? What, to appease the Bucks and Kenny as ultimately maybe the trio's tag team champions? Is it to appease Adam Cole? I mean, clearly I don't think that's something Tony Khan's interested in. Or what, to push Orange Cassidy, to push some of these guys? I mean, listen, you bring back, you know, you resurrect the FTW title. You put it on Tom Holland this week. Again, not a huge spike. I get it. Marks for that audience, oh, yeah, they blew a load on themselves. Great. I didn't see the big deal in Hook, whatever. Whether or not these trios tag titles moves the needle, I think we're seeing, though, consistently, man, it's not working. It's not something that I would say is going to really move the needle, as you know, when it comes to this audience. But it's funny how tribal AEW fans get online, because as soon as those titles were introduced, and I get it, some fans are happy about it, but the first thing that was consistent, I don't know if you watched Twitter this past week and also on Instagram. And, well, I know you're not on Facebook, but fans were just like, all right, well, more titles? Or, well, what does this do? Why are you going to do this? What, to just feature a few guys and never defend them? Again, you just create a new championship and it's being defended on Dark. Like, Jesus Christ, the Geography Championship shouldn't be on Dark. It should be prominently featured on Dynamite. But again, it just seems like Tony Khan doesn't want to listen to anybody. And it's like his way or no way. And he's just going to go down with that shit, bro. It's kind of tragic for a guy spending that much money and the ROI is just not coming to him.
Yeah, I mean, look, inevitably, you know, he's probably going to end up going down to, like, small buildings, like, you know, 3 to 5K buildings. You know, he's going to keep, like, Ring of Honor alive. He'll keep that Mark Indy crowd, like, alive. But, like, as far as it goes with, like, them expanding, going global, like becoming like huge, like, you know, people can criticize WWE all they want for SummerSlam and saying that they couldn't sell at that stadium, but to be able to draw almost 50,000 people to that place, regardless of that, is still pretty impressive. And something that AEW can't even do. With the amount of money that they have and with the talent that they have, they still can't even do something like that. And that's a problem, you know, because they should be trying to get there. And the intent isn't there. That's the other thing, too. The intent to get to that point is not there, because if it was, they would be making their product a lot more mainstream, and they're not.
You know what? And to that point, I'm glad you brought that up about attendance. Yeah, listen, it's great that they can fill up the United Center. It's great that they're probably going to fill up the Arthur Ashe Stadium in September. Again, these are all buildings that are around 20,000, you know, maybe a little bit, a shade under 20,000. I mean, last night, what was the big talk going into last night for SummerSlam, right? Oh, you know, it was only 38,000 seats that were sold. And I get it. Again, yeah, you know this terminology. The camera, the side of the stadium where the camera is. I mean, if you noticed, I mean, they shot away from it very quickly, but if you noticed the way they were walking from the ramp, the other side of the ring area, there were a lot of empty seats. Okay.
Yeah.
Whatever that camera is, that the hard camera? I'm sorry, you know these terms better than I do. Is that the hard camera?
The hard camera is the side that the cameras, it's the opposite of the crowd side. You know what I'm saying? So that's the non-hard cam side.
Okay. So yeah. So if you, again, these are little things I pick up on because I'm very OCD about it. If you watch some of the entrances when they were walking towards the ring, you could tell that other side of the stadium was empty. For those of us that, you know, you and I are NFL fans, we know that these are buildings that house 80,000 seats. I mean, by and large, you know, Nissan Stadium seats around 78, almost 80 and change. Okay, going into last week, right, what was the chatter? Oh, WWE's only sold 38,000 seats. Well, guess what? Last night, Kane was in the ring. Obviously, you know, he's the mayor of a nearby town, Knox County. They announced it at a little over 48,000 and change. Well, guess what? That is more that AEW will ever see. They could book shows for the next 6 months, and they may not reach 48,000 people. So, again, we've talked about it before. The marks, the AEW fans, oh, look, they only got 48,000 people in that stadium. AEW is nowhere near. And I know that people want to say, well, Fernando's always about, you know, making equivalences, and that's how he wants to make his point. No, you have to use equivalences to say that it's still a tough economy. We're living through really, really trying economic times. Again, I don't want to get into that. I get into that on Mondays. But, you know, it's still a good showing for fans to go to Nashville. Dude, as we learned, it's a wrestling weekend in Nashville this weekend. We had GCW show on Friday, SmackDown, SummerSlam last night. We have Ric Flair's last match tonight. You know, that's going to pack people into Nashville in the Municipal Auditorium. Hey, maybe people don't have F around money like they used to just go to as much as they can. 48,000 people for a SummerSlam, that's a good turnout. I think that's the upside I'd like to look at, because AEW's not going to get 48,000 people anytime soon.
I mean, bro, it ain't even about that. You know, again, like everybody was complaining about this card. Oh, this card's weak. Oh, this card's this. Oh, this card's that. All this nonsense, right? And what did I say? I said, hey, yeah, the card might be X, Y, and Z, right? And even people might not like it, but the performers are going to show up like they always do. And what
Correct.
Happened? The performers last night, that entire ensemble cast performed, and they were excellent. And everybody did their part to create a great event last night. And look, you didn't see any boring chants in the crowd. It didn't go 16 hours. You know what I'm saying? It did what it did by the time, like, honestly, the show kind of flew by for me. It really kind of flew by for me.
Yeah, that's right.
You know,
yeah,
there
that's
wasn't.
Right. That's right. That's right. That's right.
Even the matches that I felt were going to kind of drag ass, like let's say McAfee and Corbin, you know, I knew there would be high spots in it, but I figured there'd be a point where the match would drag ass. It didn't drag ass. It really, even Liv and Ronda, people could say whatever they want to say about Liv or Ronda, right? even that match didn't drag ass. None of the matches dragged ass. The show was like a good amount of time. The fans were still into the main event by the time it came around. You know what I mean? There was big spots there. There was a lot of good stuff on the show. And I think that's what made it good. So, again, people could talk about attendance all they want, all the WWE this. Yeah, you know what? Yeah, they didn't. You know, John Cena was supposed to be on this card, okay? But, you know, things happened and that didn't work out, okay? You know, there were other people that were probably supposed to be on this card. Randy Orton, for sure, was supposed to be the main eventer. Brock Lesnar wasn't even supposed to be on this card, I don't think. So, you know, I mean, there's a lot of variables to consider as to, like, you know, how and what they could have done to sell out the whole stadium. But regardless of that fact, they put on a great show with solid matches that the fans were into with the crowd that they had. And they what? They got almost 50,000, 48,000. 48,000, dude. Come on. You know what I mean?
By the way, Nissan Stadium in Nashville has a capacity of 69,143. Again, this is for NFL games for the Tennessee Titans. Obviously, having field-level seats, everything else, that changes the dynamic. It's still, again, a great turnout, especially in a tough economy where people maybe just don't have the money to go to these type of events, and that's okay. And it's not, you know, you said it perfectly, you know, not to focus on the capacity thing too much, but yeah, you're right. It's about top to bottom, a good card. How many Dynamites do we watch where the fans are leaving during the end of Dynamite, if not Rampages, because it's just a boring show? Again, I think it's the myopic relationship that wrestling fans have. And again, listen, it just continues to be tribal. And they're going to be tribal again about these titles that they keep introducing. I mean, it just seems like Tony Khan's like, well, I'll just introduce titles because that gets fans into a frenzy. Well, guess what? Yeah, people got into a frenzy about the geography title, and you haven't seen it since. Unless you watch Dark on Mondays and Dark Elevation on Tuesdays, which I do not. I may have watched one episode in the last calendar year of Dark and Dark Elevation, because I'm either watching Raw, I'm either watching Tucker Carlson, or I'm watching NXT. So I'm not really into those shows for AEW, but it just seems, man, again, more titles, more problems, and that's what we're doing. That's what we're watching in AEW, bro.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, it just seems like at this point, like, Khan's not going to change any of what he's doing. You know, take Danielson, for example. You know, Danielson came back, had a great match with Garcia and stuff like that. Believe it or not, there's actually fans out there complaining that they're tired of hearing about his concussions every time that he wrestles. And it's like, wow, I guess you haven't watched wrestling, and you don't know that when you hurt something, it's going to be hurt your entire career, because that's what wrestling's about. And people are just going to use that as part of their storytelling. But, I mean, Danielson, you know, for me, this is a guy that should be in the main event. He should be the champion. He should have been the champion a long time ago. This is a guy who's been, you know, on reality television. You know, this is a guy who, you know, got over a champ, like got over a huge champ that people did at sports stadiums. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, he transcended wrestling. He had a lot of crossover appeal. And instead of putting the championship on this guy and making this guy, you know, your torchbearer, so you could build up CM Punk, let's say, to get to that level, to be a main eventer again, he just goes and he just says, ah, screw it. We're not going to do that. And look, a lot of it, too, is Danielson. Danielson wants to do this. But, I mean, there comes a time as a promoter where you got to kind of, like, just say, hey, man, nah. Like, you're a main eventer. This is what's best for the company. This is what's going to keep the company going. You know what I'm saying? And I just think that, you know, Tony Khan just really lacks that awareness, and he's very insistent on doing things that really kind of make no sense and are not good, you know, for his product now or in the long term. So, again, you know, let's see what he does. I think he's hell-bent on putting that title on CM Punk and having CM Punk in his mind go head-to-head against WWE, because he's convinced that if he puts that championship on a heel Punk, he's going to draw better ratings. He's going to do bigger numbers. He's going to get more people to care than the people who tune in to see Roman Reigns every Friday. So, hey, good luck with that one. I think regardless, the fans are going to win. The AEW fans are going to love that. The WWE fans are going to continue to do what they're doing. And wrestling fans and sports entertainment fans in general are just going to watch what they want to watch anyway. So, yeah.
And again,
it should be interesting.
It's a great time to be alive because there's a lot of options for wrestling. You know, obviously, you're seeing it this weekend in Nashville. Different wrestling promotions are gathering, providing different things for fans. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think you said it perfectly. Folks, again, that's our show for this week here. Before we let you go, again, I want to thank you all for tuning in here. You can always check out all of our episodes free of charge. You can download them, listen to them anywhere, anytime, from any PC, Mac, smartphone, you know, again, any iPhone. For those of you that have flip phones, I mean, again, if you can tune into this, we love you. Please do that. Tablets, you know, preferably, you know, iPads, which are very easy to navigate. So use those. Again, www.blogtalkradio.com/workinthemarks. Shout out to D Rotten, our great brand ambassador who just is very ingenious and does great things to promote our stuff. So God bless you, D Rotten, because you do outstanding work for us here on the show. Shoot us an email about what you like, workinthemarks@gmail.com. What don't you like? Do I bloviate too much? Does Pat bloviate too much? Are we interesting? Are we not? What do you like about the show, ladies and gentlemen? Write to us. We love to hear feedback from our fans. workinthemarks@gmail.com. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram @working_the_marks. Our own Instagrams as well. Always great content there. @PaddyRican, PaddyRican. Make sure you follow me. @NoFilterRebate. Ignore the little message you get from Instagram. Yes, follow me. I don't do anything misleading, so follow me. Also, follow us on Twitter for the great PBR, @PatrickSKVM. And, of course, same brand, name for me on Twitter as well, @NoFilterUribe. Yes, Twitter hasn't shadow banned me yet. Let's hope not. And make sure you follow us on Facebook, folks. Working the Marks, easy to find. You'll see that great picture of PBR and yours truly on there. And again, Pat, before we close it out here for the weekend, any last thoughts?
Nothing much, really. I mean, I think I kind of we kind of broke it down really, really well. And yeah, folks, feel free to hit us up, send us any chain letter. You know, please don't send us anything saying that you live in Haiti and you want us to invest in solar panels or something. We're not going to buy into that kind of scheme. And also just want to promote my upcoming show, Thoughts and Prayers 22. That's going to be at Crave 43 in Union City, New Jersey. That is next Saturday, August the 6th, featuring performances by Earth, the Breathing Planet, Locaine, the Child Actors, and the Mighty Aerosmith Fragment. Might want to come and check that one out. We got some hot deals. You can get tickets for $10 if you get them online on Ticket Tailor. We're going to be releasing all that stuff. I'll be releasing that on my social media at Paddy Rican, PaddyRican. And if you buy the pre-sale, you get a $10 ticket and you get a drink voucher. So you might want to check that out. And anybody else who would want to purchase a ticket day of, it's $15 day of at the show. But overall, great time chatting it up here. Look forward to another great episode of Work of the Marks here. Can I close it out?
Absolutely. Real quick before you do, though, Pat, I just want to send a shout-out to our fans here. Again, folks, check out our episodes. Make sure you always tune in every Monday night live at 6 p.m. Eastern time for Real Talk with Fernando Uribe via Jersey First TV. I can't say enough, folks, about everyone that tunes in. And despite all the shadow banning stuff that goes on with Facebook, I'm still getting thousands and thousands of views every single week on the episodes. I'm interviewing everybody on the right, on the left, in the center, journalists, activists, mayors, legislators. And it's not just, you know, a couple dozen views, a couple hundred. We're talking about, like, you know, I've been peaking at 4,000-something views, 3,000s. I've been consistently in the 2,000s, 3,000 views every single week. Folks, you'll love it. Tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Eastern time, I'm going to have Paul Malshine, one of the, you know, columnists at the Star Ledger. He seems to have taken some exception with jabs I've been taking at the Star Ledger. because they're so blatantly biased and liberal. But you want to tune in, folks. It should be a very interesting exchange coming up tomorrow night on Real Talk at 6 p.m. Eastern time. You can tune in on Facebook Live on StreamYard and also on the Jersey Verse YouTube page. All right, Pat, take it away, brother.
Ladies and gentlemen, he is the Professor Fernando Uribe, and I am the TR superstar, Patrick Rivera. And every weekend here on Blog Talk Radio, we are working the marks. Take it easy, everybody. See you next time. The